Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is British jazz vocalist and pianist, Anthony Strong. After receiving his education at the prestigious Guildhall School of Music, he built a reputation as a session pianist and even supported stars including B.B. King. His EP release, De Lovely, reached number one on the UK charts, and he went on to perform at festivals throughout Europe, as well as sold-out shows at Paris's Duc de Lombard Club. After signing with Naive in 2012, he has continued his rise with his album Stepping Out, which features a mix of classic jazz songs and originals. Anthony Strong, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Is this your first time in the United States?
It's my first time as an adult, as a fully grown human, yes. I came as a child with my parents as a tourist, you know. And then later, actually, I did a music tour with my school when I was about 17 or 18 to New York and Boston. This is my first time here doing my thing, as you might say.
What kind of music tour did you do with your school? That's intriguing to me.
Well, I went to a music school. So this is the Purcell School of Music.
As in Henry?
Indeed, as in Henry.
Yes.
And it was a tour for 2 weeks to New York and Boston. So we played in some music colleges, and I think we did the Manhattan School of Music. I'm going back sort of 10 years now, so 11 years now, so I can't remember exactly what we did. But yeah, it was great fun, and I sort of, my first time in the States.
I assume your first musical studies were classical music?
Indeed, yes. In fact, I was a clarinetist when I was young.
A clarinetist?
Odd thing to think about looking back.
You still play?
No, not at all. And the weird thing is, now I'm a jazz musician, when I played the clarinet, and I played the clarinet for 10 years, I never even once thought about improvising on it. And I don't know why, and there's some great, you know, clarinetists that improvise. But for me, it was just solely a classical thing, and I played in orchestras, and I got into music school as a clarinetist. And then I think they caught me jamming on the piano sort of 6-7 hours a day and doing 0 hours a day of clarinet practice. So they soon after offered me jazz piano lessons. And that was when I was about 17. And I'm 29 now, so I guess I've been playing jazz piano for about 12 years. And I was just hooked ever since I had my first lesson, yeah.
Certainly all of the other types of music that you studied must influence your jazz playing. Do you think orchestrally when you play?
I'm not sure if I think orchestrally. I try, and when we go on the road, I go out with a 5-piece, so it's me on piano and vocals and bass, drums, sax and trumpet. And whenever we play live as a 5-piece, I try and think of it like a small big band. So in that respect, I kind of think about orchestrations. And sometimes when I'm playing solo piano or free music, I think that probably I can hear more strings and woodwinds and things going on. But it's not necessarily something that I immediately snap to when
you're playing.
When I'm regularly playing, yes. Yeah.
So you've had some lovely success in the UK with your jazz work. And it's all, it seems, come sort of quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it a long time, but it's I've got a great team in London, great agent and manager, great band as well. And so the last 4 or 5 years seem to have kind of really been very exciting. And this last year, obviously, with the release of my last record, very exciting times.
So your newest recording is called Stepping Out, inspired, I assume, by the Irving Berlin song.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, it's called Stepping Out.
Stepping, because
this is the English version. inspired by the great standard.
Well, I'm delighted that you're going to perform some things for us today. Today it's just solo without the group. We'll hear some of the CD tracks. But would you please play the title track from your Stepping
Out
recording?
Absolutely.
Stepping out with my baby, I can't go wrong cause I'm in right. It's for sure, not for maybe, big day maybe tonight. Stepping out with my honey, It can't be bad to feel so good. Never felt quite so sunny. I keep on knocking wood. There will be smooth sailing while I'm trimming my sails. In my top hat, my white tie and my tails. Oh, stepping out with my baby. Can't go wrong, it feels so right. Ask me when will the day be. Big day maybe tonight. If I seem to scintillate, it's because I've got a date. A date with a package of the good things that come with love. You don't have to ask me, I won't waste your time. But if you should ask me why I feel sublime, swing. They'll be smooth, say them all, I'm trimming my sails. In my top hat, my white coat and my tail. Oh, stepping out with my baby. Can't go wrong, it feels so right. Ask me when will the day be. Big day may be tonight, cause I'm stepping out, baby. I'm stepping out, stepping out, stepping out with my baby. Yeah, stepping out tonight. I'm stepping out, ba-boo-dee-da-do.
That is Stepping Out with My Baby from our guest Anthony Strong's newest recording, Stepping Out. Did you know much about songwriters when you went into jazz, about who wrote the songs?
I didn't know anything about the songwriters, really. I mean, I did one jazz standard when I was very young for a singing exam, and it was a Gershwin tune. It was actually Lady Be Good.
Huh.
But I didn't think I knew at the time that that was even called a jazz standard. It was just a song from a show. That was as far as I knew. I was just so caught up with the harmony and playing. I was just, you know, I don't care about the composers, just get me to a piano and let me play. You know, that was my theory at the time anyway. But now, of course, I've, you know, studied this music intensely, and the Gershwins and the Berlins of the American Songbook are my favorites.
Well, that music does seem to have great currency for people everywhere. It always fascinates me how those songs take on different identities and different meaning for people everywhere. And it's wonderful.
Definitely.
It's a great legacy. I'd like to get to another piece here. You've chosen one to perform that was written by Harry Connick. Sort of, I guess, a modern-day standard.
Yeah, I think so. This is Harry Connick's probably my biggest influence, and I love the fact that he's an all-rounder, that he's got a great voice, he's a great piano player, an arranger, performer, you know, he's all these things, a celebrity now as well. When I did my first album, Guaranteed, I wanted to write an album of new standards, so songs that were written in, you know, post-2000, but sound like they were from 1920 to 1940. So that was my first album, Guaranteed, and this is a Harry standard, what I call a Harry standard. This is Recipe for Making Love.
Bit of me and a whole lot of you, just add a dash of starlight and a dozen roses too, then let it rise for 100 years or two, and that's the recipe for making love. It doesn't need sugar 'cause it's already sweet. It doesn't need an oven, cause it's got a lot of heat. Or just add a dash of kisses to make it all complete. And that's the recipe for making love. And if you get it right, you'll know it. It's not like anything you've ever made before. And if you get it wrong, you'll know it. Cause it won't keep you coming back for more. I didn't get it from my grandma's book up on the shelf. I didn't get it from a magical and culinary elf. No, a little birdie told me you can make it for yourself. And that's the recipe for making love. Like anything you've ever made before. And if you get it wrong, you'll know it. It won't keep you coming back for more. No, I didn't get it from my grandma's book up on the shelf. I didn't get it from a magical and culinary elf. No, a little birdie told me you can make it for yourself. That's the recipe. Oh baby, that's the recipe for making love. That's the recipe for making love, sweet love.
Our guest Anthony Strong performing Recipe for Love live in studio. How is it to play the song solo when you're probably accustomed to doing it with a band?
Yeah, it's different. You know, obviously I've done a lot of touring. I've probably done, I don't know, 150 gigs in abroad in different countries over the last year and a half.
So
yeah, it's been great. I mean, every month I kind of go away to a few different places and play a few different gigs. So it's been really great. It's amazing. That is amazing for the music, because obviously you play so much, it just becomes like second nature. You can really concentrate on the performance aspect, not thinking, I hope I get this note, or I hope I'm not too sharp on that, and I hope this comes together. You know, all of the
minutiae.
Yeah, all the jeopardy is gone from it. You know, it's just about having fun now, and there's no. I don't ever read music, obviously, but my band, after doing so many gigs, they got it down cold now as well. So, playing the piano solo is great fun. It brings me back to when I was a student, a music student, doing weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Did you ever do piano bar, what we call piano bar?
I did. Well, actually, I did more. I did a few private clubs in London for a while. That was good fun. And of course, you meet lots of, in London, in the private clubs, there's lots of celebrities. And it was funny, I'd bump into some of the people that I'd already worked for in these clubs. And I did a lot of hotel, you know, sitting in a lobby of a hotel. But to be honest with you, it was great fun, because nobody cares. I get to practice on a beautiful grand piano for 3 hours, you know, and then I go home, and it's like, you know, there's definitely worse jobs out there. So I didn't mind that at all. And yeah, so it's really nice coming back and playing a solo set for you here today.
Well, I certainly love solo piano and voice. It's one of my favorite things, actually.
Mm.
So it's fun, especially when someone has, as we call it, chops.
Oh, bless you. Well, talking to the man himself.
Well, thank you. One of my favorite songwriters is Victor Young, and I feel that he is neglected these days, not very well known.
Yeah, there's a few songwriters like that, I think. Yeah, definitely Victor Young's one of them.
You've included a couple of his songs on your newest CD. I'd love for people to hear the sound of the disc and hear the production on it. Does When I Fall in Love have any particular significance for you?
Well, only in as much as I dreamt about recording with a string section from a very young age, and being in a room conducting my own, you know, arrangements and things like that. So this is a beautiful song from the record, beautifully played by the string section, and I had a great time recording this song.
Is this your own orchestration, or is it your layout? Or
yeah, this is one of my arrangements, and this is me conducting the string section as well.
Oh, well, this is great. When I Fall in Love, performed by our guest Anthony Strong from his newest CD, Stepping Out.
When I fall in love, it will be forever. This is love has ended before it's begun, and too many moonlight kisses seem to cool in the warmth of the sun. When I give. It will be completely, or I'll never give my heart. And the moment I feel that. You feel that way too, is when I fall in love with you. And the moment I can feel that, you feel that way too, is when I fall in love. It will be forever. When I fall in love with you.
That is a classic song with music by Victor Young, performed by our guest, Anthony Strong. How influenced, Anthony, are you by classic songwriting when you write your own material?
That's a hard question. I never really thought about it. I mean, obviously, I have all of these different inspirations from Victor Young. You just mentioned, instrumentalists, other singers, other modern day songwriters, and I kind of, in my head, they're just all of these different bits and pieces over the years which I've just are ingrained now. And so people like Stevie Wonder, Burt Bacharach and Paul McCartney, lots of modern day songwriters definitely influence me. Yeah, I love modern music, I love pop music and soul music, so someone like Stevie Wonder is a huge inspiration.
For so many people I speak to on this program, he is. Hmm. Is there a classic British songbook other than Noel Coward or Ivor Novello?
Not really. No, not that I know of. Nothing that's as weighty as the American songbook anyway. Noel Coward songs are great as well, but for me, they don't quite fit in the same, they're not in the same, quite in the same ballpark as, say, Jimmy Van Heusen tune.
Do you write both music and lyrics?
I have done. I tend to leave the lyrics to somebody who knows what they're doing. I'm a bit of a charlatan. I can write lyrics, but it's not my forte. I'm a musician, and when I write, I can write very quickly, and I probably write, I don't know, a couple of songs a week. You know, whether I finish them or not is another matter. But the music for me just flows. It just comes naturally. It's not something that I want to, that I have to work hard at. I have to work, me working hard is making myself practice, you know. But in terms of writing and composition and songwriting, it's just a case of choices for me. I feel quite lucky. Now, I work with a fantastic lyricist called Guy Mathers, who's someone I went to school with, actually. But then he went on to study at Oxford, and he's got he's just a genius when it comes to lyrics. He's like one of these old Jimmy Van Heusen songwriters. You know, he's got this wit and a language and this bite to his words that it's really something else.
There is a song on your Stepping Out recording that you wrote that you just performed solo on the recording. I'd like to ask you to do it here live.
I'd love
today.
To.
Is it a song that you wrote with Guy?
It is indeed, yes.
So is there a backstory to this sad love song?
There isn't, I'm afraid. Despite when I released this, I broke up with my long-term girlfriend, so she was sure that this was written about her, but I promise you it wasn't.
All right, so she was disappointed.
she was doubly disappointed, I think. But.
Well, let's listen to it now. Learning to Unlove You.
Learning to unlove you will take a little time. Now I've got forever, that's okay. To take you off the books, untangle all the hooks. I'm looking forward to it in a way. Getting to forget you will be like tearing down the image of your palace in my mind. Take one last look around and burn it to the ground. Unloving you will take a little time. To treat you like a fever, like my known enemy. To be a non-believer in my own memory. I wake up every morning no more than half awake, head full of ideas in my mind. Belly full of lead and strangers in my bed. Unloving you will take a little time, my darling. Unloving you will take a little time. Every morning, no more than half awake. Head full of ideas in my mind. Oh, belly full of lead and strangers in my bed. Loving you will take a little time. Oh, really? I'm loving you. Will take a little time. A
beautiful song written by our guest Anthony Strong with Guy Mathers called Learning to Unlove You. There's more coming up in a moment with Anthony. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Song Travels from NPR Music. Anthony Strong, you have appeared in the West End in a show called Million Dollar Quartet, in which you portrayed Jerry Lee Lewis.
I did, yes.
That requires a very different piano style, sort of Barrel House boogie-woogie.
It does, indeed.
Powerful left hand, and right hand, for that matter.
Yeah, it was a challenge, actually, because something I'd never really got into before. I knew of Jerry Lee. I knew about boogie-woogie, but I never thought it would be something that
I love the way you say that, boogie-woogie. We say boogie-woogie.
Oh, yeah? Boogie-woogie. But it's never something that I thought I would ever do. I hope this doesn't sound rude, but I thought boogie-woogie was something that people did at dinner parties to, you know, show off. Like, that was their party trick. I can play a boogie-woogie tune. And I didn't really realize, I didn't understand the sort of full weight of the subject, you know. So, yeah, I got offered this role, and I thought, when am I going to get the chance to sing and play on a West End stage and be a crazy, mad guy? It was hilarious. Yeah, it was great fun.
So you simply auditioned for the show out of the blue?
No, I mean, I had to audition, but somebody called me, a friend of a friend who was another musician, called me and said, hey, they're looking for someone to fill this part. You'd be great. Are you up for it? You have to put your life on hold for a year, sort of thing. But I realized that, you know, with holiday days, I could sort of do it around what I had to do in the daytimes, basically, which was rehearse, get my pad together, get my band together, get well-oiled and rehearsed, you know. So I jumped for the opportunity, and it was a real change for me because...
Was it 8 shows a week?
Well, I was an understudy, so in fact, I had the luxurious position of being able to sit at home on my sofa until they called me, which, you know, happened, I don't know, 11 or 12 times in the whole year. So I had the enviable position of watching TV for quite a lot of that.
And what about learning the dialogue, though?
Well,
inhabiting the character.
At the very start of the show, we had 4 weeks of rehearsals. That was hard. But, you know, it was a real blessing in disguise, actually, for me, because I thought, well, this is going to be great. I can sing and play piano on stage. But little did I know that it was going to teach me so much about performance. And, you know, having a director and a production team sort of style you and try and make you into this star, Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, I've kind of picked up a lot of those licks and tricks and gimmicks that Jerry Lee used to do. I mean, I don't play piano with my feet and things like that.
But you know how to now.
I know how to, yeah. And finishing a show and having 2,000 people, you know, on their feet going crazy. Jerry Lee finished the show in Million Dollar Quartet. He's like the last encore, jumping off a piano with a mic stand, you know. It was so much fun, and it really did teach me that showing off is my job, you know, as Anthony Strong, as, you know, when I'm playing Jerry Lee, that was my job. But now, as I realized that doing my show on the road, I used to be this timid, oh, I hope you enjoy my music kind of musician. And now I think I come on stage and I'll say something like, you are going to have a great time tonight, because I know that kind of confidence and assertiveness is really half of the battle, I think. You know, there's thousands of great musicians out there, but I think the ones who shine have a not just great talent, but also a confidence and a persona and a, I don't know.
Well, it's showmanship. It's show business. And the one thing they don't teach you in a music school is the other part of it.
Absolutely.
As a performer, any kind of performer has to be able to relate to the audience, not only with their art, but with other ways of connecting, which has to do with body language and the way you look at people and the way you dress and all of those things for which we are all judged in. When we are on a stage, those elements have to be learned.
Yeah.
For me, it was in piano bars that I learned all those things. But they have to be learned. And I agree with you. That's the difference between success and failure sometimes, not talent.
Absolutely. And there was a time as well, coming from music college, where I thought, no, the audience are here to hear some music. They should, you know, it doesn't matter what I'm dressed like or what, how I perform on stage, it's about the music. They should be listening with their ears, not with their eyes. And, you know, a few years of doing those piano bars and seeing other people sort of really performing like Jerry Lee used to, it really taught me a thing or two. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'd like to show how much you've come out of your shell by asking you to perform Lady Be Good for us right now.
Absolutely. And this is actually one of the very first songs that first jazz songs that I ever learned. This is for one of my singing exams.
Listen to my tale of woe. It's terribly sad but true. All dressed up, no place to go. Each evening I'm awfully blue. I must winsome miss. Can't go on like this. I could blossom out, I know, if I could find someone like you. Oh, sweet and lovely lady, be good. Oh, lady, be good to me. I am so awfully misunderstood. Oh, lady, be good to me. Oh, please have some pity. I'm all alone in this big city. I'll tell you, I'm just a lonesome babe in the wood. So lady, be good to me. Do you,
That's a bravura performance of Play to Be Good by our guest, Anthony Strong. So when you perform in other countries, is music truly the universal language?
I think so. And I've got a great band that I go out with, and it's, as I said, it's a slick set now. But in every country, whilst, you know, different countries have their different traits, by the end of the evening, we always kind of get to the same place, which is a kind of synergy or energy in the room, which is, I don't know. My concept about music is having fun. That's kind of my main thing. It might seem simplistic, but I think if you have fun with the music, then other people have fun, and who doesn't want to have fun, you know? So, yeah, it might start off with, in some countries, a more sort of placid, polite audience, whereas in some countries I'll get screams and roars as I come on stage. But really, at the end of each night, it's a kind of similar similar gist, yeah.
In Paris, you've performed a lot in Paris. Mm. Do you speak French?
Un petit peu, a little bit. So I speak enough to order a croissant and a coffee, but...
but not on stage?
A tiny bit. I mean, it's not something that I'm not fluent by any means. So
it's not necessary to speak French?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we're lucky because so much of the world speaks English, you know.
Do you sing in other languages?
I don't, although I'm tempted to sing in French. I think it's such a beautiful language. But yeah, like learning lines for the gig. If I do an introduction in French, it's something that I really have to learn, and it would be the same for a song.
I learned an introduction when I toured with Liza Minnelli in Italy.
Wow.
In 1987, I had to learn Italian, and I still remember that intro.
Oh, yeah?
La madre di Liza diceva sempre che questa era la sua canzone preferita. That's the only thing I can say in Italian. So.
I know, I can recognize a few of those words. I studied Italian for a little bit in school. But,
So certain songs in different places become popular. I've discovered in my career, I go to certain countries or certain places and people know certain works from my repertoire. There's a song that seems to have gotten big for you in some places.
Yeah.
For Once in My Life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is from De Lovely, which is my second release, and I mean, I've got to be honest, this arrangement, this is wholly inspired by Harry Connick Jr. But we did a little video for this, and we put it online, and this proved to be a very successful song for me. Yeah.
Let's listen to your recording of it from Anthony Strong's second disc, De Lovely, for Once in My Life.
In my life, I've got someone who needs me, someone I've needed for so long. For once, unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. But once I can touch what my heart used to dream of, long before I knew, somebody warm like you made my dreams come true. Yeah, for once in my life, I won't let sorrow hurt me. Not like it hurt me before. Me. I'm not alone anymore. For once I can say, this is mine, you can take it. Long as I got my life, I know I'm gonna make it. For once in my life, I got someone who needs me. My life.
Oh, that's a great song. It's a great song for Once in My Life. Mm. It almost never saw the light of day. Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen heard the song when they were in Detroit. The composer played it for them, and they said, this song will never go anywhere. Mm. The guy was trying to get them to publish it, and they turned it down.
Wow.
But then, of course, Stevie Wonder recorded it, and truly the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow, I never knew that.
As a contemporary jazz musician, do you consciously pick up a song and say, is this too pop to do a jazz version of? In other words, do you have to be judicious in what songs you choose to interpret in a jazz mode?
Yeah, I think so. And for me, I really enjoy taking a jazz tune and maybe putting a groove behind it and making it slightly more pop. And in similarly, taking a pop song and maybe changing up the harmony or making it a swing feel or Latin feel and you know, making it more jazz. So, yeah, it's a very thin line, yeah, that you have to sort of tightrope across.
So do you worry about how, not worry, but do you project how it'll be perceived or what people will think or...
I don't think I worry about how it will be perceived or worry about what other people would think, but I think it has to stand up to my own litmus test, which is, would I buy this? Do I like this? Mm. You know, there's a few things on my first record which I wouldn't do nowadays. Not because I don't think that it's good music. It just doesn't represent me, or B, it's not something that I really love. And I think if I'm my own boss, you know, I get to decide what I want to sing and play. It's got to be something great, and it's got to be something that I love. Otherwise, I think it's just not real. You know, people come to the show and they can see that I'm in my element. I'm playing with my best friends, I'm playing songs that I love. You know, it's got to be something that I really care about.
There is a more contemporary song that that you've recorded. It's Bacharach and Elvis Costello. What attracts you about I Still Have That Other Girl?
I think it's a really great example of classic songwriting from a modern perspective. So by that I mean that it's beautifully crafted in a way, like, I can't speak for the US, but for the UK, so many modern chart songs seem to have very little craft to them. They seem to be sort of formulaic pop songs. Mm-hmm. And the whole record, Painted from Memory, which is by Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello, every song almost is a real gem, where it's a masterclass in how to write songs. They're not just doing verse, chorus, middle eight, chorus, chorus. It's, you know, it's so much more than that. And the orchestrations are great. The harmony's beautiful. And the whole concept is just gets me.
Would you sing I Still Have That Other Girl?
I would love to.
to say that we should finish it now before we weaken, 'cause we already know this is wrong. I could give in. Sometimes I think that I will. Despite my temptation, I try to keep a very strong. In my reluctance, seems a surprise. It's not 'cause I don't want to, but I just know I must hesitate. Because I still have that other girl in my head. Still have that other girl.
Haunting song, I Still Have That Other Girl, written by Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello. And I have to say that your interpretation of that song is very different from Elvis Costello's. Hearing you sing it is, in some ways, for me, revelatory.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I have quite a different take on vocals, or quite a different vocal styling to someone like Elvis Costello. He's one of a kind. I used to think about wearing different hats. So I used to think, this is a pop song, I'm going to sing it with a pop attitude. Or this is a jazz song, I'm going to sing it really clear and pure and less vibrato and things like that. And the more recording I do and the more gigging I do, the more shows I play around Europe and whatnot, the more I think I find my own style and find my own voice in terms of who I sound like. You know, I've heard myself from quite a lot now on some radio and interviews. And I think confidence is a big part of that, but also doing it for a few years, you start to feel where you're at, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Yes, it's like Sammy Davis Jr., who amazingly did not like his own voice. He
right.
started as an impressionist, and even some of his early records, a couple of them say in the style of so-and-so.
Really?
He was so insecure, and I guess later he came to accept that he had his own sound and personality, but even someone as great and legendary as Sammy Davis Jr. took time to find his own unique voice.
Mm.
So I well understand what you say.
Yeah.
For our last song, I'd love to do something with you at the piano, because you're such a marvelous accompanist. I'd love to sing Caressed by Your Chords.
Oh, I'd love to.
There's a song that you recorded on the Stepping Out disc that I'd like to sing with you. It's Victor Young and Ned Washington, who won an Oscar for When You Wish Upon a Star. Beautiful lyric. 1948, I think, is the year the song was written. So let's do it. My Foolish Heart. The night is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart. How white the ever constant moon. Take care, my foolish heart. There's a line between love and fascination that's hard to see on an evening such as this. For they both give the very same sensation when you're lost in the magic of a kiss. Your lips are much too close to mine. Beware my foolish heart. But should our eager lips combine, then let the fire start. For this time it isn't fascination or a dream that will fade. It's love, this time it's love, my foolish heart. That was beautiful, Anthony. I love doing that with you. Thank you.
No, thank you. That's great.
It's really wonderful to have this time with you. Thank you for your talent and for being here. And I look forward to what's to come.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you, and all the best.
You've been listening to Song Travels with host Michael Feinstein and his guest, Anthony Strong. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Luz Muse Recording in Los Angeles, California, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, associate producer Laura Hunsberger, recording engineers Jim McCurdy and Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Kathy Bradbury, The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is songtravels@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. You can learn more about the artists and music on this series by visiting our website, scetv.org/songtravels. Song Travels is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. Additional support comes from NPR and NPR member stations. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. This is NPR.